Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. The future of the Miami-Dade County Expressway Authority, or MDX, remains with the courts. This past year, Governor DeSantis signed into law the abolishment of the MDX for the creation of the GMX, the Greater Miami Expressway Agency. That went to the courts, where a Leon County judge said that it violated the home rule principle for the county. Now, one of the state lawmakers behind the original bill was Republican State Senator Manny Diaz Jr., and we spoke with him recently about MDX and also about charter schools. We started by asking his thoughts on home rule and the future of tolling on our highways. This prevents the state from taking over a county-run authority. Why do you think home rule should be exempt in this particular situation?
This is not a home rule issue because this was a statutorily created entity by the state legislature, and the state legislature has its authority to create an entity such as a transportation authority. It was not created by home rule. It was created by state statute, and then the way it was implemented, it were given the local authority to appoint members of the board and remain local control, and the funds remain locally. But remember, these were five state roads that were turned over to these authorities. So this was a statutory creation which allowed MDX to exist to begin with, and it's not taking the transportation authority does not belong to the county. It belongs to the residents of Miami-Dade County as a separate independent entity that oversees those five roads. And so I think where the confusion is, home rule was designed so that the state allows the local government to be able to manage its own issues when it comes to zoning, when it comes to local roads, things of that nature. But when it comes to what were state roads that are managed independently by a board, this was statutorily created. In other words, had the legislature not passed a statute to create MDX, to allow the creation of MDX, the county couldn't arbitrarily create it. Does that make sense?
Okay, yes. But is it basically a fight between locals wanting to have control and the state wanting to have control?
No, absolutely not. No? Because this, if you look at the makeup of the law with the new GMX, it's actually continues to be completely local control. Despite the rumors, none of the funds leave Miami-Dade County. They stay in those roads. Simply, what was implemented was some more rigorous transparency when it comes to procurement, when it comes to disclosure. There was a change in the board to allow for more locals to be appointed with the input from the eight local mayors, which are the largest eight cities, which sit on the TPO. So all it did is reconfigure some of that to allow for more input from the locals. We know that traffic is affecting all of these cities, and so there should be more input from other entities, not just the county commission. At the end of the day, these roads affect all of us, not just the county commission, and it's not a county entity. It's an entity for the residents of Miami-Dade County to support and maintain traffic. And the interesting part is, after the law was passed and signed, and even while it's being debated, the MDX board met, which I believe illegally, but decided to reduce or to implement the rebate of 30%, which all along what they were saying is they couldn't afford to do that because it would cut projects. Well, clearly there's enough money in there, which is what we were calculating when the bill was passed, that they can reduce these tolls for people who are using it every day, and they still have money left over to be able to complete some of these projects, including the Kendall Parkway.
And, you know, one of the other things obviously people think about when they think of tolls is they think about the debacle with SunPass. How does that get alleviated? I mean, you know, because people have lost trust in this contract. Basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's one of the issues that Governor DeSantis inherited when he came in. That's an executive procurement through the DOT. And I think there's inexcusable for any vendor who has that massive impact on drivers all over the state to have these kind of mistakes. And I know that the governor's office, the DOT, have been dealing with that. And I think we may end up seeing another vendor come in. There are other vendors across the country that do this same services. And in fact, if you drive through Central Florida, you'll see that some of those other vendors are already accepted on some of those roads in CFX, which is the Central Florida Expressway Authority.
I mean, how would you like to see the tolling system reformed on a larger scale?
Look, in an ideal situation, you look at the express lanes in on I-75 in Miami-Dade County, for example, where you didn't reduce any lanes of the what we so-called regular lanes, but you were able to add express lanes. And for those folks who are traveling long distances, like from 595 all the way into Miami-Dade, if you are able to provide these express lanes for those that want to pay that extra money to travel those long distances, I think that's ideally how it would work. The problem that exists, for example, on the, let's use the Palmetto Expressway, and that is not working, is that you had a limited number of lanes and you reduce the lanes that are available to the non-paying drivers, number one. Number two, you don't have I think there's an issue with the design of where exits and entries are to the express lanes. So a lot of folks can't even use it. And I have to remind everyone that this was approved and designed and approved in 2010, 2011. So we're talking about 8 years ago, even prior to my entry into the legislature. This was designed and approved by the DOT, then went through the process of being approved by the Metropolitan Transit organization locally. So this went through several steps and it was approved by it's not something approved by the legislature. So in the ideal world, if you had the ability to create extra lanes for those folks that are traveling longer distances and are willing to pay, that would work. In the Palmetto situation, I think we don't have that. I think what we have is more congestion. And what I'm doing is asking the DOT to review this immediately for immediate relief, because I think either a reduction to one lane or a suspension of the express program immediately until we can figure out what's wrong with the design.
I'm talking with Republican State Senator Manny Diaz Jr., the senator, one of the key proponents behind legislation that would move the Miami-Dade Expressway Authority into a new entity. Now, this is currently being challenged in Florida courts. He's also the Senate Education Committee chair, and I want to talk about some education stuff. Senator, you want 80% of education funds to be spent within the classroom. Describe right now, though, what classroom expenditures entail.
What I'm trying to do is to try to put a focus on where dollars are spent on what affects students. A lot of times there's administrative expenses or other expenses that happen in school districts, and the dollars don't make it to the classroom. So a classroom expense is anyone in the building that directly affects the education of the child, whether it be the actual classroom teacher and their salary, or whether it be a teacher aide, an assistant, whether it be a pullout teacher, whether it be an interventionist, whether it be a speech therapist. Those are all things that affect the student directly. And look, school districts are in the business of educating children. And I understand that there are other functions that they have to do in the grand scheme of things
to like
be
safety.
Able to operate. Right, correct. It's not a new wrinkle, but it's a new intense focus that we have. So those dollars would not be those dollars would probably be exempt from that 80%, or they would be accepted as part of the money that is expended to protect the child in the classroom. In other words, is the expenditure being spent directly on the child?
And do we know that? Do we know what the expenditures are district to district, classroom to classroom?
We have 67 districts, and we have 67 different ways of doing it. There's one way they receive the funding. However, districts budget and allocate internally in different fashions across the state. Miami-Dade actually does a pretty good job, especially for a large district, in putting those dollars in the classroom if you look at their overall budget and what they spend per student. But I think there's a huge variation across the state from district to district. And what I'd like to see is more of that focus, because this is a three-pronged approach. We talk about, especially for Miami-Dade, we talk about teacher salaries and compensation, which we all understand. The teacher is the most important component. I mean, you could have a teacher literally teaching outside in a yard under a tree. If you have a great teacher, those students are going to learn. Now, the second component of that in Miami-Dade is the district cost differential, which we're trying to get, right, which is gives us a little bump for the cost of living in Miami, which is more expensive than a lot of other places in the state. And the third part is making sure that those dollars which come down from the state when they're received by the district are spent on the classroom and wisely. And
well, so, because as you bring up, I mean, teachers are looking for better pay so they can live in South Florida. And there's always the criticism, we're not spending enough per student compared to some other states, why we may be ranked low. Why not approach it that way? Tackle each one of those separately instead of saying, you know, let's just increase the overall spending on, you know, what percentage we spend for education? Let's tackle each one of these things. Or, I mean, is that just another way of tackling it? I'm trying to get at that point is what I'm trying to figure
right.
out.
Right. It's another way of tackling, because what good does it do us to increase any kind of spending if we don't have more of a focus on making sure that it's going to end up in the classroom where it has, number one, the largest impact on the student, and number two, if we're saying we're going to deal with teacher compensation and teacher shortages and those things, the incredible part is that in Florida, if you look at the state revenue part of the budget that is generated by the state and not pass-throughs from the federal government, we already spend 38% of the actual budget on K-12 education. So we spent almost $23 billion on K-12 education. And every year we grow. So right off the bat, you're looking at $250 million to $300 million that must be spent just to account for new growth without adding $1 per student. So if you were in another state and I told you that you were going to spend an additional $300 million on education, people would have a parade. The problem in Florida is that because we're so large and because we grow so much, that the $300 million only gets us back to break even.
How does that impact charter schools?
It would impact charter schools in the same manner, in that they would have to spend the money in the classroom. Now, the benefit that charter schools have is that they're smaller and leaner, and so most of those benefits end up going back, those funds end up going into the classroom anyway, because in order for them to compete, they have to go out and bring in teachers, and instead of having the scale of a district, and especially in larger cases where you're able to kind of even out the money, you have to, if you have one building, you got to make sure that you have the dollars going into the classroom, because otherwise you don't perform, you get closed.
You know, Florida has been near the forefront when it comes to expansion of charter schools. And I mean, do you think, I want to get a sense from you, is, you know, are charter schools the better option? Is this the way that Florida should be going?
I think the better option is to allow the parents to make that decision. And so I think the
but you have role, to have more charter schools
right.
to give them
well,
an option.
The policymaker's role is to lay out all of the options for the parents to have it. And what happens is a lot of times we have not had quality options or additional quality options in the neighborhoods or the areas that needed most. And I think that that's the focus that we've had over the last few years, is to try to attract more options into those areas where a parent doesn't have the quality traditional public school or magnet option. So if you go into a neighborhood where, you know, people that have wealth and resources can pick up and move their house, buy a house in a better neighborhood and get a better school.
Sure.
Those that don't have the resources can't do that. So we go back to, okay, so what are the schools that are available? Is there a quality magnet school within my geographic range that I could actually drive in Miami traffic and get to? If that's not available, am I at a poverty level where I can take advantage of one of these scholarships that are available to then get to a quality private option, or is there a charter school? So in all that mix is if you don't have the quality neighborhood school. In a neighborhood school, in a neighborhood where there's an A school that parents are, it's not only it's an A, but they're satisfied with what they're getting, they're not looking for anything else.
We aired this documentary back in August, called Chartered. It looks at charter schools in Jefferson County, the only county where all the schools, and you know this,
right,
they're run by a charter company. And it's the Somerset Academy, that network. When you look at that, do you think that is a model that could or even should be duplicated elsewhere in the state? The idea that the entire district is run by a charter school.
Not necessarily. I think that that's a model that may fit there. And remember, that's a period of time where 13 years these system of schools that were failing these kids, where they were retaking courses that they had already passed, where they didn't have books, where all these things were going on. That model may fit there. That's not the model that fits in all 67 counties. In some counties, you may have, for example, a school of hope that may come into one particular area of the county and serve, you know, one school or two schools. In other counties, they may not need it at all. So I think that's a tool in the toolbox. I honestly don't think that you're going to see that replicated in other parts of the state at this time, because I think that there are other options that work depending on where you are in the state.
I know that you've had people ask you about this. I mean, because your employer, Doral College, in my understanding, they do get money from Somerset Academy, right?
So we serve Somerset Academy schools.
Okay,
and I do
see.
Enrollment.
I mean, so is there an issue there? Is there any problem there having that connection?
No, I mean, I'm a member of the citizen legislature like everybody else that votes and does things. We did not allocate any money directly to Somerset. They've qualified for Schools of Hope after they had already done the takeover. The takeover was not, a lot of people don't understand, the takeover was not directed by the legislature. The Department of Education asked Somerset to come in and take over those schools. I would say probably reluctantly at the time because they're far away from their home base. I think they've, in my time as chair of the Education Appropriations Committee in the House, we did some digging on how much money was being spent by Somerset on some of the revamping of the buildings. And they had spent $4 to $5 million up front. So for those that think that that's an endeavor where it was a money-making endeavor, I think Somerset will tell you, if you talk to them, that they were basically asked and they went in as to try to white hat the issue. So it's an issue where the benefits to the kids.
Senator, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Republican State Senator Manny Diaz Jr. speaking with us about the future of MDX, as well as his education priorities ahead of the upcoming legislative session. On Tuesday of next week, we're going to be speaking with Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez about the MDX controversy. Well, still to come, sea turtles are in trouble. What do we need to do to protect their future? That's coming up on Sundial.